You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, legacy.
I'm Peter Plank, the artificer. I've got everything at hand in my Goblin Welder's toolbox.
I'm Daniel, the scientist. I ponder precisely about the next move that decides the fate of my opponents.
I'm Philip Klein, the rogue. I use the graveyard to fuel opponents with agony.
And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 71, Cowboys and Artifacts of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I'm Philip Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about legacy.
Most of the time.
So at first, I think it would be great to have some kind of response here.
And now we go to In Response to the Media. This is the section of the show where we talk about something happening within the community. And actually, we have a small, cool post from Rodrigo Tugores. And he found a tournament where they had anonymous voting for splitting in the top eight. And for our extent, this is something that we definitely approve.
Yeah, I think it's something that is just removing any feel bad moments for any player who doesn't want to split usually and just wants to play out the tournament in the top eight. And for competitive levels, having an anonymous vote for this kind of thing seems like a good thing. And I guess we can all approve.
Yeah, 100% agree here, right? Because it's just... that's just the best thing that you could do, actually. I wonder why nobody has thought of this until right now. Yeah, it's just such an easy fix.
And with that, I think we can hop into the main topic of one of many's that we have today. And there has been a new spicy list in Legacy that popped up and actually won the Legacy Challenge lately. It is, I would actually have the feeling of some affinity kind of nostalgic feelings when I saw this list. It was a really big deck in Modern back in the days. I don't know if you had in the past.
The pleasure to play
against it, yeah. It was, I think, not too, well, maybe way, way back in the days when the artifact lands were, more popular, more strong in Legacy, maybe a deck. But this time around, it's a new version evolving one of the new cards. I think it's a Simulacrum Synthesizer.
Oh, yeah. It's always, I haven't, in my brain, that experimental synthesizer, because Peter has talked non-stop, I think, for the past 2 years about this card.
Yeah, listen to some old episodes of us, you can definitely hear
2021 to 2022 was the time.
Yeah,
and yeah, when I only read the headline of the tweet, basically synthesizer won the challenge, and I was like,
and you flipped out.
Yeah. It's great, I want to see the deck list, but it's tried. And then I said,
and it's, wait, it's blue.
And yeah, I mean, I've seen the synthesizer up front, and I thought like, man, maybe it does something in Legacy. Maybe we can do something in paint, the blade blue, maybe with Thought Monitor and stuff like that. But there was like a small little creature, like a frog might actually. And yeah, frog might together with the seven drops,
the really Soul made it strong. Companion, yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically you get a lot of Urza Saga constructs that pump each other and just swing for the win. And also there's this cute little addition to the deck. It's the community calls it, it's Swiftfoot Boots at Home. I don't know right now the name of the card, but they are...
The new boots.
The new boots, yeah. They are for one mana and you get... +1/+0 and ward, haste and ward one.
And ward one, yeah.
And
for one mana to equip.
For one mana to equip, and everybody has just overseen or just forgotten that these can be fetched by Urza Saga.
Yeah.
And
I think the great thing about this is that you get to attack with two construct tokens on turn three. So
this is huge.
Yeah, end of turn, you make a construct token, mm-hmm. then the saga triggers, you make another construct token, you fetch the equipment and get to immediately attack with the new construct token as well. So it changes the clock significantly when you are against Ursa's Saga.
Yeah, it basically made it made the Ursa Saga decks like a tad more aggressive.
Yeah. And for this synthesizer, I think for shortly explaining the card, it is 3 mana artifact. When it enters the battlefield, you get to scry 2. And every time you get to enter an artifact of mana value 3 or more, you get a construct token. So it is a powerhouse, let's say, how do you call it? A power bottle kind of thing? A power level?
It's more like...
It's a Rincon, right?
You can deploy this on turn 1 with Ancient Tomb and Lotus Petal.
Mm-hmm.
And just splash out your hand with all the mocks and petals and balls and everything, and then you just drop a Sojourner's Companion or a Frog Knight, and you get another construct token.
The overall strategy of the deck is a synergistic affinity deck, like it's focused on artifacts, and you have Ursa's Saga. You also have the creature that it cast plays that against Monitor. Not the Fort Monitor, but the aggressive one that has Ward 2. And
Kappa Cannoneer.
No.
Okay. I'm running out of it.
it's the 2-drop. It's a 1/1 with Ward 2, and whenever an artifact enters the battlefield, it gets
Patchwork Automaton.
Yeah, thank you. And so overall, it's an aggressive deck that had a lot of synergistic elements to that, and Synthesizer is powerhouse on its own kind of, and I think it has another new card also in the deck that draws your cards every time you cast an artifact, I think, but I don't know the exact name at the moment, but it's also in the deck list, so you get to refuel your hand and draw through the deck.
The thing with the deck is it's on the one hand a really aggressive deck,
yeah.
But on the other hand, with the synthesizers, with the scries, with the additional card advantage from Fault Monitor, it's like also a really, really strong deck in the mid game.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if we can make it stumble at like turn 3, turn 4, it can stumble in the late game. But usually the aggressiveness doesn't really stop at the first few turns.
You know what's good against this kind of deck?
Meltdown,
Rest Down.
Yes.
Everything is basically great against Ursa's Saga.
Brotherhood's End.
Brotherhood's End is insane, actually, against this kind of deck.
Yeah, it's for sure a deck that can be hated out, but I think it's very nice showing that this new brew can win a challenge, even though some people may think that the Legacy meta game is quite stale at the moment or unfun, let's say. So I think this is very encouraging for people to try out new things. And even though this is not really a particularly strong set, like this is Outlaws, yeah?
It's
Cowboys.
Actually, I read some draft articles, and they basically said every card in the set is, from a limited perspective, good. There mm-hmm. are no really bad cards.
Yeah.
You have to draft this set pretty synergistic and get the value out of this, because there aren't great bombs in this set, because everything is pretty on the same level.
Mm-hmm. One thing they also mentioned is like with the new booster that we have,
mm-hmm.
They limited like the bad cards overall. In booster packs, so every card unlimited is like really incredible and important.
In draft, you mean?
In draft,
yeah, of course. But for Legacy, of course, there are some potentially. I think I would compare it to Fatal Push kind of level, which is fine, very good, not really nothing broken. But if we have something like this synthesizer deck being viable in Legacy, I think it's a perfectly fine thing. And I think this is overall a great thing for Legacy.
It's basically Affinity 2.0.
Yeah.
And As long as a legacy doesn't evolve into Affinity standard back in mirror then block, I'm fine with it.
No.
It won't happen.
This is nah, for sure not. It's
this is the similar like strategies like Dredge or something. It is very targetable in for your hate. You can just pack more artifact hate, more sweepers, and then it should be fine actually to play against this. I think this uses at the moment the opportunity because Pyroblast is very low. Therefore, probably Meltons are quite on the low end side also. And therefore, this deck can just fare quite nicely at the moment.
Yeah, if you lose to Frog Knights and Sojourner's Companions, then maybe you deserve it.
Absolutely.
If you handle the tokens and then you lose to them, it's all yours. I'm pretty sure.
And there is also another deck that popped up. At least I think it was a draft. I don't know if this has been played actually.
But first, actually, we have to thank our patrons. So thank you very much, Christian Neutz, Moritz Eichmer, and Matt Duncan for supporting the cast. We will use your money to fuel all this because we made some nice changes, as you maybe have heard in the last episode, and maybe you can see these now. So now let's go back to topic, and if you want to join this elite supporting group of people, thank you very much, Peter. go on patreon.com/response_legacy.
So
I think we want to rock it now.
We're gonna play rugby.
There's also another card that has been up in discussion for recent times now. It is the new creature Ares, the whatever, I don't know the
name. Ares the whatever. It's basically, we don't really care about the names, but it's like, it's a 10 mana 4/4 for blue and red that that gets cheaper for every spell you cast a turn? Or?
Different it mana is cost of instant and sorceries, I think, in your graveyard.
Exactly, yeah. It's 8 generic and blue-red, and it is reduced by 2 for every mana cost of instants and sorceries only. And it's a 4/4 prowess. And whenever you cast your second spell each turn, you get to
make your 4/4 elemental token.
I think it's a dragon. It's a 4/4 dragon with prowess. And it has been drafted in a rug shell, including cards like, of course, Force of Will, Brainstorm Ponder,
Pyrokinesis.
Exactly, Pyrokinesis.
Or even more spicy, the Fire and Ice.
Fire and Ice, exactly. And Brazen Borrower, Force of Negation. So you have basically from 1 to 6 mana all instant and sorcery spells that you can potentially use to fuel Ares. And it's on the surface, it seems like it could be a nice, let's call it tempo-ish mid-range style, because it plays up the Beanstalk as well.
Yeah, you get to refuel your hand. I mean, if you play this 4 mana dude and draw a card, and now you have something to play a second spell that turn, there's just so much value in this turn. I mean, I cannot possibly see you lose that game anymore.
Mm. Yeah, the thing is, it also plays like Murktide Regent, Dragon Rage Channeler. And the thing is, like, it's now really, really extremely dependent on the graveyard. You have now with Murktide and the big thing with Ares, you have like so many dead cards. If your opponent has like a Leyland of the Void, it's insane. You are so dependent on the Brazen Borrower getting rid of it.
All of your threats are graveyard dependent, right?
Yeah.
You have Dragonbridge, Chandler, Ares, and Murktide. Yeah. It is a problem for sure. And it remains to be seen if Ares itself is strong enough for Legacy. On paper, it looks nice, but I guess when it will see, well, people will get their hands on the cards, we will see if it makes an impact on the metagame or not. I feel like personally, when I had the chance to read through this card, I feel it feels a little bit dicey for me. Similar to, I don't know, Similar to the new ley line, actually. If you get to reach the position where you can cast it for only two mana, it's very good, but otherwise it feels underwhelming, kind of. That's my impression, at least.
Yeah, but at least it pitches to both Pyrokinesis and Force of Will. So
that's good, yeah.
these are things that we have to talk through, because cards pitching to other cards is a huge bonus.
It is a bonus. It is absolutely true.
And as long as like creatures like our Orcish Bone Masters and stuff like that is like hugely relevant to the meta game, and you have like the free Pyrokinesis in your hand that you can cast to remove it, and maybe even another body, or you can pick up like two artifacts or two constructs on end of turn two, for example, because like both are 2/2s and they haven't fetched for the artifact. There is some good stuff that the card can do.
Mm-hmm.
And even though elves are currently not available for Legacy.
Eris.
Elves.
Elves. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Eris is also pretty hard to get your hands on in paper, because I tried to get them last week for the FNM, and it was just, pretty much impossible.
I think the normal version is also a foil one. And if you want the non-foil version, you have to go with the borderless version, actually.
Yeah,
I think.
That's right.
It is the only non-foil version, actually. Or seems I think there's a third version as well, but it's weird.
The normal version is the foil version.
Yeah. It's because of Commander, right?
What kind of time we live in.
Exactly.
But there are also some, I don't want to say sleepers, but some very, very Graveyard-dependent cards in this set, and that's Satoru.
Mm-hmm.
Satoru the Infiltrator. It's for blue and a black, I don't know, it's a 2/3 legendary creature with menace. And whenever Satoru or another creature, a non-token creature, comes into play and no mana was being spent to cast it, you draw a card.
Exactly, yeah.
Seems on the surface a little bit meh, actually.
Well, it seems designed for ninjas.
Yeah, it seems designed for ninjas. But if you think about it a little bit more, it has insane applications, actually, in our format, actually.
Enlighten us.
I mean, the first... I had a little talk with Marcus. He tried it in...
Who is Marcus, by the way?
Marcus Schmidhuber.
Is one of guys from... I think we had him in our streams, probably.
Yeah, we didn't have him on the cast, but we for sure had him on our streams on our YouTube channel of the Austrian Legacy League. And he said to me he tried one of Satoru in Blue-Black Scam.
Okay.
To simply draw a card when you reanimate a Grief, or to reanimate an Atraxa, draw another card. That's kind of fine. But the card actually gets more tried out in Dredge, in Blue Dredge. That's more my jam.
There is a Blue Dredge, like blue-black, straight-up
blue-black. Straight-up blue-black Dredge is maybe even the most common Dredge version at the moment. That plays... Leadless, also, also with no Lions of Diamonds.
And no looting, of course.
No looting, no Lions of Diamonds, plays four Otherworldly Gaze, and is pretty much has also an Underground Sea Fetchland mana base,
mm-hmm.
and is a little bit slower, but is plays Force of Will, Force of Negation in the sideboard, and has a really, really strong mid-range game.
Okay.
And they try Satoru as a Dredge enabler, that can be hard casted on turn two.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
from your hand. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's basically you make your land drop or play your fetch land and say go. End of turn you Otherworldly Gaze, put a Dredge in your graveyard. You go into your turn, you dredge. You play Satoru, you dredge. Maybe you hit an Archimeba, you dredge.
Mm-hmm.
And then the value just explodes from itself. And it triggers off every Poxwalker that comes into play, it triggers off every Ikarit that comes into play, it triggers off Narcomoebas, and also If you dread return any kind of other creature, it triggers again.
Yeah.
And it basically, you can fuel your whole deck with just a single Satoru and just two or three turns.
Is it a must draw or is it a may draw? Because like
these are questions.
Because a must draw,
I have to look it up now.
Iffy for Legacy, but yeah, Satoru is not only on the dredge side, but on the other side, if you talk about like the affinity list with Rockmites and Soul Contra, not Soul Contra, the Soulmate
Simulacrum. Oh, no. Soulmate. Okay, yeah,
it's a must draw.
It's a must draw. So it can be like a negative.
It can backfire, but that's pretty seldom, I think.
I mean, you can sack it basically to
Dread Return or to Camel Therapy. Yeah.
Or are the Nakamura triggers, are they mandatory?
You could no.
No, you can simply decide, leave them in exile.
Yeah, you could use.
You can simply leave them in the graveyard.
Yeah, because in that case you could also control. I mean, it's worse, of course, because you don't get your Nakamura's, but it's an option. If you would mill your whole deck, you could say, okay, I leave this one Nakamura in the graveyard and then be fine.
Trigger on the stack, brain freeze you. No, but I mean, it seems like a good thing. I can also see it in like affinity lists together with Frogmite or the 7-drop.
That is true.
It's basically an additional draw.
The problem is it's not an artifact itself. So
that's true.
There's less synergy there. But yeah, you can experiment with the card.
As far as I know, there are implications also in Modern for Satoru.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're a Legacy podcast, but this is just something from my heart. Because the interaction of Satoru the Infiltrator and Norrin the Wary is just value in itself.
Esper value, whatever.
It's an Esper, it's Grixis.
Ah, of course, yeah. I always think that Norrin is white.
No,
for
it's
some
red.
Reason, for me, it's always white.
It's a good color.
Because it does nothing.
It does nothing if it's white.
It just draws you a card every turn.
Yeah.
Oh.
But besides doing nothing, do you want to talk about your tiny bone?
Well, I'm always happy to talk about tiny bones. That's a 1/1 Death Touch out of the new Outlaws of Fun Junction. And it's basically a fixed Ragga Van. It's whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you may cast a permanent card from their graveyard and use any kind of mana to cast it.
Mm-hmm.
So you, unfortunately, you can't cast Brainstorms and Ponders and Brilliance, which really made Ragga Van really great.
True.
Or is it more a kind of a Dreadnought Arcanist? I'm unsure.
I think
it's
a
bad Horde Arcanist.
Yeah, it's really a bad Horde Arcanist.
I mean, it can do some stuff, especially since it's like with Death Touch and it has to get through, but it seems only really usable if you're playing against like a permanent heavy deck.
Which is rarely the case in Legacy. Yeah.
And you have to play a lot of removal.
Like, and if you play it on turn one and attack on turn two,
you won't
get value most likely. The problem is, I think, also you cannot use opponent's fetch lands because you only can cast the cards.
This is
a problem.
Do you exile the card and then are allowed to cast it?
You can just cast them.
I think it stays in the graveyard then because it's cast and then goes back to the graveyard.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's not a graveyard hate. I mean, it's fixed for sure. But it's overfixed in that sense.
Probably, yeah. But it was just really nice to see that the experiment with a different angle here to fix a certainly really broken card.
Of course, yeah. But there has not been a list, right? It's just from the spoilers now.
Just from the spoilers.
There's no legacy list at the moment.
But I think there are also some lists with the next card we want to showcase here. And that's Pest Control out of the Big Score set. I don't know why they made another set.
Nobody knows.
In the set.
It's for a couple of sets now that they just make subsets and commander sets and nobody knows anymore. But yeah, this is one card that is also now new to the Legacy format. And I think there has been a little bit of a hype on this card. Let's say because it is quite nice. It is, a sweeper. It destroys non-land permanents of CMC or mana value 1 or lower. And you can cycle it. for two mana. So it's never a dead draw and can be main deckable for this reason for sure. And yeah, if you think of Legacy, you have, I don't know, Mox Opal, you have Chrome Mox, you have of course Delvers, you have
Dragonrage Channeler, there's Phyrexian Dreadnought,
Chalice of the Void, Construct Tokens. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things to it. It seems quite flexible almost, yeah.
Actually, the only downside I can see to this card is that's not blue.
But you can add blue to the card.
Yeah, but it doesn't pitch to Fossil Will. That's maybe the only downside but here. Because Supreme Verdict is blue.
But it pitches to Grief.
It pitches to Grief, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That I think this was one of the discussions that this card might slot into Riskaminator. A lot of decks of this deck already splash white in the sideboard for Swords or Serenity. And you can then even play this in the main deck. I've seen a list online that tries two, I think, Pest Control in the main deck. It pitches to Grief. And if you're not using it, you can just cycle it.
Yeah, that's always great.
And your deck also doesn't have any CMC1 or lower cards. So it doesn't, because it's symmetrical, it's like...
You kill your Orc Army tokens.
Yeah, okay. I think you don't care about this.
It's a fine deal.
It's a fine deal, yeah. I personally would really love to try this in an Esper control list.
Oh yeah, or some kind of Esper Stormblade or something that doesn't play one drops. Just Ponder, Brainstorm, Swords, Suplosures. Yeah. Sounds awesome, actually. Cryptic Codes. Yeah. Really great.
It seems just the combination of Orcish Bowmaster, Swords, and Blue has some legs, potentially. But maybe this card can help for, I don't know, more difficult things to deal with. A Chalice can always be a problem.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I think you can experiment with this card, and I think it's not overpowered. I think we don't really see it, right?
No, for sure not. The only thing is, I think it's pretty expensive, money-wise.
Money-wise, I think it's like €8 or something.
Eight? Yeah. Okay, I thought it was about 25 or something.
It's a mythic, so...
Yeah, we'll probably go up.
Yes.
No financial advice here.
Buy your pest controls now. I think most of the cards I have one tiny note there, but I don't know if you now know what the card is.
No.
We talked about Slingshot.
I don't actually know either, yeah.
So, what is Slingshot?
Yeah, we can just guess, but we don't know.
But everyone can talk in or write in the comments about the card.
We
can
which card we actually originally meant, but we just kind of forget.
remind us definitely.
So yeah, I think we can wrap it up here. Yeah. And yeah, I just hope you really like what we are doing. So you can just follow us on social media. It's @response_legacy. You can find me on social media. It's @finnickmtg, PHINNICKMTG. Peter, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on x.com, previously known as Twitter. It's @unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. What about you, Daniel?
You can also find me on x.com. Of course, it is @flyingdelver.
Thank you very much.
In response, the end.
This was In Response, a Legacy podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.